Chapter 30.
They are ripe now. Let us pluck them.
With 500 of his burghers, Jan Polus had left the shelter of Allo Knoll and worked his way forward, crawling belly down through the jumble of rocks, until now they were crouched in a line along a fold of dead ground below the false crest. 20 yards ahead of them was the right-hand extremity of the English trench. They could not see it, but clearly they heard the incoherent cries of the wounded, the shouts of stretcher-bearer, and ammunition boys, here! And above the splutter of musketry, the continuous metallic rattle of breech-bolts reloading.
"You must signal to the guns, Umpol," the burgher next to him reminded him. "Yeah."
Jan Polus removed the Homburg from his head and waved with it at the fat mound at Allo Knoll behind them. He saw his signal briefly acknowledged and knew that the order to cease fire was being flashed by heliograph to the batteries. They waited, tensed to charge, a long line of men. Jan Polus glanced along them and saw that each man stared fixedly ahead, most of their faces masked by beards of 50 different hues, but here and there a lad too young for this work, too young to hide his fear. Thank God my eldest is not yet 12, or he would be here. He stopped that train of thought guiltily, and concentrated his whole attention on the volume of shellfire that raged just ahead of them. Abruptly it ceased, and in the comparative silence the rifle fire sounded strangely subdued. Jan Polus let the slow seconds pass, counting silently to 10, before he filled his lungs and roared,
"Freestaat! Come on, the Freestaters!"
Echoing his cry, yelling wildly, his burghers surged forward over the crest onto the English flank. They came from so close in, seeming to appear as a solid wall from under the English parapet, that the momentum of their charge carried them instantly into the depleted line of shell-shocked, thirst-tormented and dazed Lancashires. Hardly a shot was fired, and though a few individual scuffles rippled the smooth onward flow of the charge, most of the English responded immediately to the shouts of "Hands up! Hands up!" by throwing down their rifles and climbing wearily to their feet with hands held high. They were surrounded by jubilant burghers and hustled over the parapet and down the slope towards Allo Knoll. A great milling throng of burghers and soldiers spread over 50 yards of the trench.
"Quickly,"
Jan Polus shouted above the hubbub. "Catch them and take them away." He was well aware that this was only a very localized victory, involving perhaps a tenth of the enemy. Already cries of "The Lancs are giving in! Where are the officers? Back, you men!" were spreading along the English line. He had planted the germ of defeat among them. Now he must spread it through them before he could carry the entire position. Frantically, he signalled for reinforcements from the Boer positions along the crest. Hundreds of his burghers were already running forward from Allo Knoll. Another 5 minutes and complete victory would emerge from the confusion.
"Damn you, sir, what do you think you're doing?"
The voice behind him was impregnated with authority, unmistakably that of a high-ranking officer. Jan Polus wheeled to face a tall and enraged old gentleman, whose pointed grey whiskers quivered with fury. The apoplectic crimson of his countenance clashed horribly with its coating of red dust.
"I am taking your men hands up away,"
Jan Polus struggled gutturally with the foreign words.
"I'll be damned if you are, sir."
Leaning heavily on the shoulder of a skinny little dark-haired man who supported him, the officer reached forward and shook a finger in Jan Polus's face.
"There will be no surrender on this hill. Kindly remove your rabble from my trench." "Rabble, is it?"
roared Jan Polus. Around them the Boers and the British had ceased all activity, and were watching with interest. Jan Polus turned to the nearest burghers.
"Futterlevech! Take them away!"
His gesture that accompanied the order was unmistakable.
"We'll have none of that, sir,"
Aitchison glared at him before issuing his own orders.
"You men, fall back and reform on the Devonshires. Hurry it up now. Come along, come along!"
"Hey!" Jan Polus held up his hand.
"These are my..."
He groped for the word.
These are my captures."
"Sir," Aitchison released his grip on Saul's shoulder, drew himself up to his full height, and glared up into Jan Polus's face. "I will give you 5 minutes to vacate this trench. Otherwise you will become my prisoner. Good day to you." And he hobbled away through the grass. Jan Polus stared in disbelief, when 50 paces away, Aitchison turned, folded his arms across his chest, and waited grimly for the expiry of the 5 minutes. About him, He had gathered a handful of battle-stained soldiers, and it was clearly his intention to implement his threat with this pitiful little band. Jan Polis wanted to laugh with frustration. The skinny old goat. But he realized with dismay that most of his prisoners were filtering away and hurrying to join Aitchison. He must do something, but what? The whole position was deteriorating into a farce. "Stop them!" he shouted at his burghers. "Hold those men! They went hands up! They cannot change their minds now!" Then, abruptly, the whole position altered. Over the skyline behind Aitchison and his tiny party poured a solid phalanx of fresh khaki-clad figures. The three battalions of reinforcements, sent up from the foot of the mountain by Sir Charles Warren, had at last arrived. Aitchison glanced over his shoulder and saw them swarming forward. The brown parchment of his face tore laterally in a wide and wicked grin. "Fix bayonets!" he shrieked, and drew his sword. "Buglers, sound the charge! Charge, men! Charge!" Hopping and stumbling like a stork with a broken leg, he led them. Behind him, the glittering crest of a wave, a line of bayonets raced down on the trench. Jan Polis's burghers hated naked steel. There were 500 of them against 2,000. They broke and blew away like smoke on a high wind. Their prisoners ran with them. Jan Polis reached the crest and dropped behind a boulder that already sheltered three men. "Stop them! Here they come!" he panted. While the British wave slowed and expended itself against the reef of hidden Mausers, while they fell back with the shrapnel scourging them once more, Jan Polis knew that he would not stand in the British trench again that day. He could sense the despondency among his burghers. He knew that already the faint-hearted were slipping away to where their ponies waited at the foot of the mountain. He knew with sickened acceptance that he had lost Spion Kop. Oh, the English had paid a heavy price, all right. There must be 1,500 of their dead and wounded strewn upon the peak. But they had torn a gap in his line. He had lost Spion Kop, and through this breach would pour 25,000 men to relieve Ladysmith, and to drive his burghers out of Natal and into the Transvaal. They had lost. It was finished. John Aitchison tried desperately to ignore the agony of his bloated foot. He tried to shut out the shrill chorus of the wounded pleading for water. There was no water on the peak. He turned his gaze away from the trench, where men, drugged with exhaustion, oblivious to the thunder of the bombardment that still raged about them, lay in sleep upon the bodies of their dead and dying companions. He looked instead at the sun, that great bloody orb, lightly screened with long streamers of cloud. In an hour it would be dark, and he knew he had lost. The message he held in his hands admitted it. The grotesque piles of dead men that clogged the trench proved it. He reread the message with difficulty, for his vision jerked and swam giddily. "If you cannot hold until tomorrow, retire at your discretion. Buller." Tomorrow. What would tomorrow bring, if not a repetition of today's horror? They had lost. They were going down from this mountain. They had lost. He closed his eyes and leaned back against the rough stone of the parapet. A nerve in his eyelid began to twitch insistently. He could not stop it.